stick to something you know about.
Listen, my daughter was about your age. Then she met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You still believe in ghosts, Pea Brain.
He's a closet!
Don't hurt me, please!
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman!
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer!
A little water. My obsession with dairy. Let me clear my throat.
Did you say you have an obsession with dairy? Is that what you just
said? Yeah, I've been eating a lot of dairy lately, so I'm very phlegmy.
Oh, good. Me too. Yeah. I just had a big cup of hot chocolate. It was great.
Oh my God. Any coffee milk? Did you just splash a little coffee milk in there?
I went overboard a couple weeks ago, and I'm staying away from it for a little bit.
And no water in there, Farley. It's 100% milk for you.
Milk and cream.
Yeah. Mm. If someone gives you a hot chocolate made with water, do you poo-poo it? Yeah.
That's not nice.
That's not right.
Little old grandma like, hey, welcome to my home. Here you go. Makes you a hot dog. Pours the hot water on the pal.
Get out of my house.
Get out of here, lady.
Hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doom Show. I am Richard. Folks, this is a very different episode because I am talking to thrice people. That's including myself. I'm talking to two of my favorite people from the world of indie filmmaking, music, and books. I'm talking to filmmakers Charles Roxburg.
Oh, call me Charlie.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
You know what, Richard? I was going to tell you at the beginning, just call me Charlie. It's more easy. And also, if we ever needed people to start watching our movies to like actually get me out of my financial ruin, I think it's easier for people to remember the movies if we say it's like a Farley and Charlie movie because it rhymes.
I'll hashtag it. I'll hashtag that for you guys.
I'm bad here to do this preamble. But yeah, we're making a little documentary about like our movies to date. And that's what it's going to be about. You know, it'll be like Backyard Movie Makers, but we're going to say that a lot.
Nice.
So hopefully it gets stuck in people's head.
I am talking to filmmakers Charlie Roxburg and Matt Farley. Hashtag Charlie and Farley.
Hey, hey.
These guys, I discovered them many years ago from a little book called Shock December. And because I was trying to find any cheap books about horror movies that I could find. And Shock December was the nice price. And these three guys, Charlie, Matt, and their buddy Tom Scalzo, they stayed up and watched 21 horror movies in 48 hours. I immediately felt a kinship with these guys because that's what I've been doing for years. I just hadn't been documenting it on my site yet. So what I did was I literally stole the idea to write about my movie-thons. And as I was reviewing movies, and I found out that these guys had made a film called Freaky Farley. And they were kind enough to send me a copy to review. And my mind was blown because I used to get a lot of screeners, a lot of independent films, some of them made with heart, some of them made without heart. But this movie just hit all of the right buttons for me. These guys clearly loved making movies. And I did something that I've never done before. I watched the movie, took notes, then the next day made my best friend Nafa watch the movie with me. When I watch a movie, I don't want to see it again for like months.
Yeah.
But I was so addicted to Freaky Farley. It is such a joy to have you guys here. Thank you for bringing that movie into my life. It is an absolute regular Halloween movie for my wife and I. We watch it like twice a year, and it's just something so great. So thank you. And thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, if ever there was a target audience, it's you, you know, like anyone who would do a 3+ hour podcast about 1982 slashers is the kind of person we're making that movie for. Right, Charlie?
Yes. And someone who's going to go into Blood Cult beat by beat and appreciate the Arby's like to the nth degree. You don't just like go by the Arby's scene and not mention it. You gotta like wonder what's in the bag, wonder how cold it is, how long it's been sitting on the seat next to him. Yep. You know, you gotta really like enjoy all the little things that get into a regional movie that don't pass muster on a big budget movie.
I think Arby's maybe have requested them not to list them as a sponsor.
You made our food look too unappetizing. So
no blood cults, please. Now, as usual, this is a thing I always do. I've done this since I was a kid. I was like, wow, who's this band called Yes with this cool song called Owner of a Lonely Heart? That must be their first song. Wow, that's neat. Not knowing they've been around for like, you know, a decade or two before then. Tell me about the movies you guys made before Freaky Farley. Because what Freaky Farley was 2007?
That's when it came out, yep. Do you want to go back to the college days, Farley? Do you want to start that?
In high school, Charlie and I both, we didn't know each other, but each of us were making movies with our friends in high school. Shorter things. The longest thing I'd made was like 34 minutes on VHS. And then in college, Charlie and I started making short videos together like right away. He was a year ahead of me at Providence College in Rhode Island. And then his senior year, my junior year, we were like, all right, we got to make a feature. And so we looked it up, I'm pretty sure, and like, there's different definitions, but generally it was like, as long as you're 60 minutes long, you're a feature. So we made The Paperboy, and like one of the main goals was just to fill up like 60 minutes in 1 second at least, you know, so we can be like, we did it. And then after college, Charlie got, at the time, you know, a pretty good mini DV camera, which... you know, at the time was a lot better than VHS, and we made five movies in the next couple years.
Wow. Four Druid movies and one art comedy, Obtuse Touch.
Because I've seen Druid Gladiator Clone. That's the title, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is so wild. Like, I don't know what... I don't understand y'all's imagination, but I am glad to have seen many windows into it over the years. Like, I'm not saying you guys scare me.
I sometimes think it's this. When Farley and I are writing a movie, it's just like one of us comes up with an idea and they say, oh, wouldn't it be wild if this happens? And then we'll be like, yeah. And then maybe be like, you know what? Imagine if that happened. And it's like that next level of no one would ever do this. And we want the audience member to say, what is the deal with these guys? Are they actually a little like unhinged? Or who thought that was a good idea? And we have no money men. We have no managers, no lawyers, no producers, anybody to say, don't do that.
I've got a couple things I want to touch on as far as, that kind of one-upmanship of weird ideas. We'll talk about that when we get to, like, Don't Let the River Beast Get You. But what is it? Because I know there are things that happen in Freaky Farley, like a couple specific scenes that were inspired by films you guys love and have covered in the Shock Marathon's books, I believe. What are some of the inspiration and influences of Freaky Farley?
So, well, like when we would do the marathons, we would take notes just like you do. And a lot of it was just writing down quotes and being like, and then we'd be like, in the next movie we make, we need to, you know, use that quote or kind of, you know, recreate this weird scenario. Like there's the secret council, the mayor's secret council is meeting out in the woods in Freaky Farley, and he's like, and this is Tess Howard. She operates the
communications
system. Yeah, she's the communications director. That's straight out of
Silent Night, Bloody Night.
Well, boom, there you go. And you know, and just for our enjoyment and your enjoyment, essentially, Richard.
Well, thank you.
And the ninja, because we were watching Slumber Party Massacre 3, and there's a teen character who dresses all in black and sneaks around, and we were like, that dude's like a ninja. So then we were like, want to put a ninja in the next movie? Which we call him. Like, we're just going to call him Ninja, because that was our own shorthand we developed during the, obvious shorthand, but what we developed during our movie marathons. And I think when you watch that many movies in a row, you need something to really pop to stick with you, because you're tired, you've seen a lot. If it's a by the numbers horror movie, it's just But if someone busts out a line like she's our communications director, we would all like sit up in our chairs and be like, did that just happen? Tom, that's crazy. Write that down. We record it and, we treasure it and cherish it and use it in conversation for the rest of our lives. So I think it's those little moments that popped in the marathons. And then we started putting those into Freaky Farley.
I should add, so we made those five movies on the mini DV. And then for Freaky Farley, Charlie said that he would be able to shoot it on film. And it was like, all right, this is crazy. And this is like our chance to make a movie, like our ultimate 80s slasher movie, where it'll even look like Freaky Farley did. And so that was a major change in the way we were doing things at that point.
The quote that from a slasher I think you guys are familiar with or like is a prom night. I keep saying to my wife, Lietta, over and over again for no reason, you want to do it on the bluffs? Which I just love. That's slick.
We got to mention, of course, Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. That's the obvious main inspiration, not just for a moment, but for a whole framework and attitude of Crazy Farley. We loved that.
I saw that for the first time last year. I had never seen Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, and I posted about it. And I believe, Matt, you on Twitter, you were like, that's where I got the framing device for how Freaky Farley opens.
Yeah.
And the character, the whole thing. His attitude. Like, I'd never seen a movie. I love when I see a movie where someone does something that you just, so refreshing. I'd never seen anyone act that hard and that amount of eyebrows, that amount of energy he was giving us, because no one it wasn't like trained out of, the Ricky character actor to do that. Kind of like seeing some early Bruce Campbell, just somebody who's just so big. And when Farley got to, go crazy in Freaky Farley 2, I mean, how could you not channel that in honor of Silent Night, Deadly Night 2?
And Matt, you have a very distinct voice. I don't know if you know this. And that your voice combined with that delivery is etched into my memory forever. Blah-dy, blah, blah.
Yeah, that was dubbed too, because we filmed that one in my tiny studio apartment, and the ricketiness of the camera was just so loud that that's like all you heard on the audio. So I had to tediously recreate it, but a lot of those movies are dubbed too, so it kind of matches that weirdness from the 80s.
One last nod is The Pit.
Oh,
we watched The Pit so many times, and I think the girl on her bike.
Oh my God!
Acting childlike is the tribute to Abigail, because The Pit is just in our DNA now by this point.
That's a character I wish was in more of the movie. What is the actress's name that is playing the girl on the bike in your movie?
Katie Reedy.
She, whenever she's on screen, I just laugh. She's so funny. That delivery and that character where she's literally listening to you talk shit to your dad, and she's just hanging like, I know you're gonna come around. I can't even.
Such a good sport.
Oh, and I'd be remiss to mention Matt Farley, who plays your father in the movie?
The great Kevin McGee. Wow, he's good, huh?
Holy crap. I don't know.
He's just a powerful presence, powerful guy, and he seems like he's gonna get his way, and it was perfect for him to boss Farley around, and he's so good at talking down to Farley and young Farley guys and regular Farley guys, and those guys, whenever they were on camera, I mean, I'm looking through this tiny little lens, of this 1970s Russian camera, and it's just like, I think it's coming out pretty good. Nice. That's basically what's going through my head as I'm looking through this tiny image.
Man, this is so fun. Thank you. I just get finding out, like, can't believe I never connected The Pit with that character. That's so good. You worked with Super 16 film. You worked with Real Film for two films. Is there more than two, or is it just the two you did the Super 16 on?
Just the two. I mean, I've done other projects, like a couple music videos and things like that. But it's really Freaky Farley and Monsters, Marriage and Murder in Manch, Vegas. That was shot Super 16 with the same camera. We were able to buy the camera because it was already so old at that point and dated that it was cheaper to buy that camera and own it than to rent. So once we had bought it, it kind of felt like, well, we own it. Look pretty good for Freaky Farley. Let's try to by the skin of our teeth keep this train rolling.
It was literally falling apart by the time we were finishing Manch Vegas. So,
oh, wow.
We didn't even know. We would have to re-glue the lens to the base of the camera the last few days of filming. Like, it would have to just sit, be glued on with books, keeping it like pressed firmly, and we would just hope that it would like stick for the next day, and then we'd glue it again the next night. That was the last couple nights of filming, but it was like, we're definitely not going to be, we're barely, most filmmakers would not start making Freaky Farley with it in the condition it was in then, let alone make another movie with it. So we knew it was over with after that one.
You'd have to be insane to try.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even made to make a sound movie. That's how loud it was and rickety.
Oh, I was just going to ask if it was an old loud camera.
Yeah, that it was meant to like record like Russian troop movements or something. You know, it's like that's all it's for, and it only holds 100 feet of film at a time, which is about 3 minutes.
Oh my god!
So we would shoot, get a few takes, and then you'd hear the camera go, and it would roll out, and you couldn't really. It wasn't accurate enough to tell exactly how much film was left. It was like a gas tank kind of meter from zero to full. And sometimes I'd be like, I think there's enough for one more take left. So then we would try to get that last take. And if we think we got it, we would move on. And if not, I would have to open the camera up in a dark room, portable dark room bag, change the film out. And then, you know, you're kind of just doing it by hand. It's manual. It's like threading up a sewing machine.
So do you get in the bag? Like, do you get your head in the bag? Or is this just your arms in the bag?
Your arms go in it. To and it's zippered up.
Oh, okay.
To take the film out, so that way you don't ruin your last take. So it gets opened up and put right into a locked like snap tight case. But when you're loading the film, yeah, you gotta actually see what you're doing. So you kind of keep it in low light and just thread it through.
Okay, because I was imagining that it was very womb like for you. So if you're having a stressful day on the set, you could like pretend you had to load the camera and just hide.
When you stick your head in there, you can't breathe. It's hot. You're trying to concentrate. And it's like, it's just by feel that you're kind of getting it threaded right. And if it doesn't get threaded right, the camera will jam or it'll turn into spaghetti inside the camera. You know, it goes all crazy.
It was only relaxed. It was relaxing for everyone but Charlie. I loved it when the film had to get changed. Like, oh, great. I'm going to sit back. All of the actors were going to sit back and watch Charlie struggle with this machine, you know? And then like, If he didn't quite thread it properly and he had to do it again, we'd all like be, oh, Charlie, come on. You know, meanwhile, none of us know anything about the process and the whole movie's reliant upon him. But yeah, those are the best moments for me.
And I will say, you know, when we watch these B movies like Arana or, you know, maybe like Night of the Demon, where they're in the woods, Farley and I have lived that too. And we have a kinship with those guys. We appreciate it. We are carrying this camera like maybe a half hour walk from a parking lot to a random wooded, you know, hillside
right.
to film the Freaky Farley battle scenes against the Trogs. There's no vehicles. There's no bathroom. There's nothing. There's just us putting our stuff down on the leaves. So like I'm changing the film like in this dirty condition. So it's getting all this dirt, natural dirt and stuff on in the film grain and in the camera, just cause I'm also acting as a ninja. So I've got like stuff all over me, fake blood. And so we are really like three people. When we filmed with the witch, it was three people filming a battle scene with, you know, some of those shots.
Wow.
And that means the cameraman is on screen. So like he would just flick the switch to make it start running and then run out in front of the camera. Would we ever have Steph do some camera work for us?
Did like once or twice. Yep.
That's great.
Yeah. When you and I were walking, she panned the camera one time. But yeah, I had to run. And then the film is burning. And the film, you know, I forget the exact math, but each take is maybe like $30 or something, 10, 15, $20 to by the time you buy the film and develop it. So running like for our lives to like, get the shot, go, turn it off, you know, flying leap to hit the off button.
So that covers my next question, which was like horror stories or just war stories. Like, did anything else happen like while you were making Freaky Farley that sticks out in your mind as like just difficulties or just something weird?
When we filmed the institution at the beginning, you know, Farley had a very small, I guess you say a studio apartment, Farley?
Yeah.
So studio apartment where I'm staying over, and I had to fly into town to film this thing. So it's like all Farley's normal stuff, my luggage and a little place to sleep on the ground. And in that one room, we're trying to make a sort of believable institution. So we had to buy from, you know, like Home Depot, these flats of 4x8 flats of wood. And we had no garage, no yard. We had to go down in the alley next to his apartment, paint these things so they look like an institution, carry them up the stairs while Farley is sweating bullets, hoping that no one tells on us or the landlord or whatever. Carry them through the door up the stairs and then make a room within a room to have this institution. So there was like, you couldn't even breathe in that thing. And then by putting up the walls, we blocked out all the window light. So I had to pump these photo flood bulbs, which are like completely unsafe and hot. We're plugging in like 5 or 6 of those babies just to get exposure. And we're there with this woman who we learned about on Craigslist, who drove down from Maine to play the institution
therapist.
Yeah. And she was a game too. We're like, okay, welcome to a room within a room in this tiny apartment in Manchester. Let's do it.
Yeah, she was a good sport. That was cool. And then now to add to that story, when we're done filming it, Richard, we take those big giant slabs. What do you call those things, Charlie?
Like flats.
Flats. And we drive them to this playground that's connected to some woods and train tracks, and we use those. So what was the wall in the indoors of the institution then becomes the like the fort that the hobo lives in the woods. Those are the walls from the institution.
Oh,
so
wow.
Good. And then the bonus, the icing on the cake, I think some real hobos ended up living in the hobo fort after we left it there when we filming.
That is amazing.
Yeah, we left it there for posterity. It seemed that it got inhabited for some woods parties or who knows.
And before we move on, Farley, maybe I'm going to ask you if you'd be so kind to give Steph her props, because the way that we got the witch to film with us and the circumstances is just one in a million luck.
Yeah. So we found her on Craigslist too. And she was like 21 years old and up for whatever. And we were like, she lived in Maine also, like maybe a 2-hour drive from where we were filming.
Oh, wow.
And so we just emailed back and forth a few times. And then she's like, it's a long drive. Can I just stay over your place the night before filming? And we're like, okay, sure. So like this stranger from Maine is sleeping in this incredibly tiny studio apartment with me and Charlie.
Equipment and, everywhere.
Yeah, but we all hit it off immediately, and we just had tons of laughs. She ended up sleeping over my parents' house on another night of filming because she had something to do in Boston. She had breakfast with my parents on a Sunday morning. They had a great time. And hopefully we can get her in another movie someday. That would be cool.
She was magic.
Nice.
Yeah.
I got to give a shout out as well. Speaking of ladies that were just amazing in the film, Sharon Scalzo as Scarlett.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She is so on. Her character is just like something straight out of a freaking young adult fiction book, like the cool investigator character. She is so amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we wrote the whole thing not knowing who was going to play the role. And then I barely knew her. You know, I was friends with Tom from college, but I met her when I was going to visit Tom, and she was like, you got to put me in one of your movies sometime. And I was like, well, just so happens you can be the lead in Freaky Farley. That's the like audition process. Like, if you're interested in being in the movie, then you got it, because keeping someone interested is half the battle. You don't want to start by dragging someone into it. You want them at least to be interested from the beginning.
there's no doubt she has a gift from the gods somehow, because we only had enough film for one take of most anything. And her whole, she'd never been in a movie.
Wow.
She comes on set. Holy Every crap. Line she said was pretty much perfect in tone, in not stepping on her own words, and in the exact like lightness and comedy and greatness that we wanted. Unbelievable. So, I mean, her part is like 95% is all one take. Jeez. She'd never been in a movie before. It was just like, all right, I can't imagine it any better. Let's move on. Let's keep going. You're doing great.
And then, of course, she's in Monsters, Marriage, and Murder in Manch Vegas.
She's in all of them. Yeah. She got a little bit, you know, I guess it's about a similar role. That's more of an ensemble movie. But she, again, was just perfect. So we wrote the role for her in that one. So that was a little different. We're like, Sharon would say this, and Sharon would be good at that. So, and from then on, we kind of do that with all our movies.
What worked out well was like the tone, the attitude of that character just luckily fit the way that she spoke and acted anyway, you know? So,
yeah.
So,
that was,
you know, we didn't know her when we wrote it, but it's exactly the way we wanted it to be said, which usually is not what we get, you know? Like we write it imagining one thing and then the performance is something different. And frankly, sometimes we're just surprised the way someone ends up doing it. We end up liking better than we ever could have imagined. And if not, then that's fine too, because I'm sure that's what it was like in these 80s slasher movies. Like you go into it with all these hopes and dreams, and then just slowly all your dreams are shattered and you're just crawling towards the finish line and you take whatever whatever you can get. I embrace that. Every movie we start off with incredibly high hopes, and by the end we're like, who cares? Just whatever we can desperately do to just fill up these 84 minutes, who cares?
One thing that kind of happened during Freaky Farley is Sharon was learning that we could sometimes do voiceover for lines. And then into Manch Vegas. So she'd be like, what if Farley and I just walk down the tracks and we just dub it all later? So it was like very quick. She turned the key and she was like, okay, no. I guess so. And it worked for all of us whenever we did that. And then we did it in, you know, do some of those in Manch. We do it in River Beast where there's a walk and talk, but it's no sync dialogue. It's all dubbed.
Freaky Farley is available for rent or to own on Amazon.com, on Amazon Prime. Yeah. Now, but owning a DVD of this, Matt and Charlie, you guys got to know this. One of the Doom Show people, the Doom Show regular guys, is a huge fan of your movies. That's Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey was bitching and moaning how he cannot have a copy of Freaky Farley. But then I found a website that sells it. And he pointed out to me, yes, but that's in Pakistan. So there's some random company in Pakistan offering to sell you Freaky Farley, but there's no copies on eBay or Amazon.
They've tried.
I'm surprised there's no copies on Amazon or eBay, because I mean there's 1400 copies in existence.
Wow.
And 1,000 of them have the doomed movie-thon quote right on the top, right, Charlie?
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. So that there's very few of the initial print run that doesn't have any quotes on the front, but once we got the movie out there, once we got turned down by every festival, we decided let's just send it out to some folks who are cool and nice, and we got a few people to give us some blurbs. Also, the John Pace from Canada, the director of Crime Wave, which is one of the greatest comedies of all times. He gave us a letter. He sent us a letter typed up about how he was just really taken with the movie and he liked the emotions and he got it. And, you know, that and hearing from you and a few of the good things that happened helped, you know, keep us going and get inspired to do the next one.
Well, you guys putting my quote on your DVD was mind-blowing. And even having my quote in the trailer, in the review trailer, was just crazy. I've never seen that before. Oh, okay, that's not true. The one time I saw a quote from mine was on a movie called Branded, and I didn't really write them a very good review, so it was kind of weird that they put my quote on their DVD, but they quoted me as just saying what the movie's about. I was like, accurate.
Yeah, I love a very selectively chosen movie quote, you know, or especially if they use like ellipses, the dot, ellipses. Dot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And before I know the DVD is a little hard to get because, you know, physical media is tough. We would have to, you know, Farley had to pay, you're going to lay out $1,000 to print up these copies. And then he's got stacks of stuff in his basement and, you know, it's hard.
And postage.
Postage. I printed shirts that from Freaky Farley in 07 that I haven't sold all of them yet. So
whoa, hold up.
Including, you know, maybe I'll send you one. If an XL is decent, you just give me your address. But we just got it on Vimeo. So because Amazon's kind of, you know, they are what they are.
Yeah.
Vimeo sort of lets us have a lot less like middleman issues and just.
Well, I'll make sure that I link the Vimeo then.
So, Farley, you know, you got that link to your Moturn webpage, right? Or we're in the process of it.
Yeah, we're in the process of putting all our movies on Vimeo. So I've been waiting until they're all there before I sort of announce it. But that'll mean for, like, finally, most of our movies are streaming on Amazon just in the U.S., in the U.K., and Japan. Is that right, Charlie? Or
no, not Japan. But Freaky, I just researched it. We do have that Amazon Prime availability in Amazon Video Direct. It's not Prime anymore, but Amazon Video Direct, it's called US, UK, and Rest of World. Oh. And Rest of World is a lot of places. It's in New Zealand, Norway, Australia, Sweden, South Africa, Trinidad and Tobago.
So that's cool. And then we're doing the Vimeo thing, which is literally everywhere, so that'll be good. We don't even add up all the money we've spent. If Charlie earned minimum wage for the time he spent editing, it would still be like tens of thousands of dollars just in time spent, you know, putting it together. So we're so down. I don't know if we'll ever break even because we keep making movies too. But it's like we're trying a little harder than usual to make people pay a little bit for these movies because, I mean, we've been essentially giving them away for 15 years.
I wanted to mention, I know Matt, you saw this. I don't know if Charlie saw it. My wife, Lietta, drew some Freaky Farley fan art. She drew Ninja and the Witch and Freaky Farley.
She's got some skills.
And I'm going to try to get her to put that on something. Like, I don't know if you guys would be down, but I'd love to do like a t-shirt of that on Redbubble or something and send you guys whatever profits we make to help fund something.
So do cool. It. Yeah. So yeah. Cool.
I'm a fan of hers.
Yeah.
Me
she's,
too.
She's awesome. Yeah.
After Freaky Farley, you guys churned out and not like quickly, but quickly for some people. I mean, some people work on films for many years, but since Freaky Farley, since 2007, correct me if I miss anything here, you guys have made Monsters, Marriage, and Murder in Manch Vegas, Don't Let the River Beast Get You, Slingshot Cops, and what was the other one?
Christmas Special.
Christmas Special and Local Legends.
Local Legends, yeah.
Did you work on that one too, Charlie, or was that all a Matt special?
No, that was a Matt special. I just acted one little scene for Farley in that one.
And he advised me on the script too, which was helpful.
As difficult as it was to work with Super 16, I applaud you for doing it again with Monsters, Marriage, and Murder. And I could see why you switched to a digital format after that. You were like, I think I've proved myself now.
We would love to do it more, but we'd have to get a camera, you know, so and probably something better than the Russian one or, you know, something less than 40 years old. Charlie, go.
I'll tell you one more technical thing, and I hope it's not boring. It's going to be quick. So it's not just buying of the film and the developing of the film. It's the telecine that's expensive. Transferring it to something you can edit.
Oh, okay.
So when it came to Manch Vegas, that was the first time we got it transferred. I went to a studio or a post house in L.A. with the negative. They put it up on a reel, and it goes through and gets read by the light and goes right to a hard drive in HD. So those files I could take and edit directly. But doing that costs about, I think, maybe $275 or $300 an hour to be in the room. And they say when you're doing that, that if you want to do an hour of footage, I think you might want to allot like maybe a 10-hour day for transfer and color correction.
No.
So I go in. And the guy's like, all right, what's the general look you're going for here? I'm like, we're going to keep it plain. It's going to be normal. The movie has to look like it's your friend. It's not going to look cool. The blacks aren't going to be crushed. Basically, we just kind of want the image as it is. And he's like, okay. I'm like, let's put it on. Go, go. You know, he puts it on the thing. He's like, can I get you a glass of water? No. You know, scrolling through. And there was one scene that we knew we weren't going to use it. And he's like, oh, this is a new scene. I'm like, we're not using it. Fast forward. So he cranks the machine past it. And we're like, woo. So I never even, except looking through the lens, I never saw that footage. Holy no one has. Man. It's never been transferred.
That's incredible.
An intense, like kind of stressful process. And then at the end of that, we were able to do it in one day in maybe like 3 hours instead, or 3 or 4 hours. Oh, like nothing God. That a real human had ever done before or would ever wish upon themselves. But that's a crazy process. So that factors into the whole, you know, switching over. After that day and that bill came in, we were like, you know, at death's door.
And digital video was a lot better by then, you know. It was so much better than the mini DV thing. So we've been doing it. We did it on this Canon DSLR, starting with River Beast through the movie we're trying to finish now, Metal Detector Maniac. And now I've bought a new one for the 2020. Starting with our next movie, will be, I guess, the fourth camera that we've ever used for our movies.
The other films, the later films, are a little bit easier to come by. You guys actually have which one's on Blu-ray with other films as like extras?
Local Legends is on Blu-ray, and the extra is Obtuse Todd. Is that right, Charlie?
Yeah. We got to give props to Justin at Gold Ninja Video. He put out Local Legends, and we gave him Obtuse Todd to be a special feature. And then he also put out River Beast, which has Druids Everywhere. It made its like kind of debut finally on that River Beast Blu-ray. And River Beast had never been on Blu-ray before because we couldn't afford to strike up those copies when the movie came out.
Yeah.
So it's fairly easy to see. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff too. So people can, sometimes if people tease us or, you know, they see something that's a little dodgy in the technical field, you look at the behind the scenes and you see Farley in a River Beast costume with claws on and flippers in the woods with Sharon sitting there on the ground and me with a camera, and like, oh, that's what you had to film like the battle scene, and Tom standing there with holding the script, helping us. I mean, no chairs, no food out there on a hot summer's day, sweating in a River Beast costume.
Everyone should make a movie, you know, because that will greatly expand the parameters for what they find acceptable in a finished movie. You know, like if you've suffered through and struggled through trying to just get something finished, then like any movie, no matter how bad it is, the fact that they finished a movie is a heroic feat that I recognize.
Yeah. So like when I'm watching Blood Cult, I'm thinking, man, Sheriff Ron had to walk out into the woods and stand behind this tree at night to try to watch the secret cult. And I'm like, that was hard work, you know, like that's a whole other level of appreciation. Like, how'd they get this guy to get out into the woods and stay up so late and walk on this unsteady ground? And so you get a new appreciation, and then your reviews can get a lot more kind. I think that's happened to me. I was a little bit more of a tough reviewer when I was in college or just out. And then after making all these other movies and having many things go wrong, I'm kind of like, it's fine. When you watch a movie, whatever in there is wrong, and be like, imagine how much was going wrong.
After I saw Freaky Farley, I was determined to make a movie myself. I'd made one before with all my friends, and I made one called Laser Beams, Laser Beams, Laser Beams. And it was totally inspired by you guys, completely.
Yeah.
And the thing I noticed that was the most stressful for me was having all, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 cast members at my apartment sitting around waiting. I felt so guilty for wasting their time. I had people who were at my apartment for 8 or 9 hours to say one line. My friend Matt, he goes, I just wanted the winning lottery numbers and you killed me. And him having to wait 8 hours to say that made me feel so terrible. So, you know, you guys, I really, really respect. Not only have you completed one film, you've completed like a dozen?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's really incredible.
We feel that way all the time, and we try to write scenes that have not too many people needing to get together at one time. We try to, and then we always fail. And then I look at the finished script, I'm like, wait a second, what? We did it again. We have to fill my parents' backyard up with 20 people again. And yeah, it is tough, and you want to keep people entertained, and half the time they probably don't even care. They're probably just happy to be there, but you feel like this responsibility for their time.
And the sort of twisted scenario there is you want them to have fun, but you don't want them to talk.
Yes.
Because you're trying to get dialogue and you're trying to get through it so you can let them go home. But you want them to have fun at the same time. So it's like, can you just whisper like in the background or like, and then when you need them for a scene, you need them to be there and not like inside in the air conditioning or playing Nintendo or something, you know? So
yeah,
it's
very delicate.
Yeah, yeah. You need them at the ready and quiet, but also having fun. So you need just really patient people who are like willing to sit there and do a crossword until you're ready for them or something.
But by now, we've worked with people long enough that they most of them know what they're getting into ahead of time, and we try to warn them like crazy. And I'm always just like, if you don't want to do it, I totally understand. Like, it's a total waste of time. Don't do it. Don't do it unless you're real. Are you sure you want to do it? Because trust me, it's fine. It's fine. You know. So I try to give people lots of outs ahead of time. You know, and still some of those people will then quit the day, you know, the morning of. And it's like, why didn't you tell me this 6 months ago? Ugh.
Yeah. The girl who got hives during Manch Vegas.
Yeah, yeah, sure morning she did. Manch- she oh, just no. didn't want to get up.
So you guys, you mentioned Metal Detector Maniac, which is still being made. Where is it at as far as, like, what's the status of that film?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably 75% shot. What do you think, Farley?
I think it's 85. 85.
85.
Oh, wow.
I'd say 80. We'll meet in the middle.
Excellent.
Yeah. And it's going to have a lot of music. So we got to wait till we could get, basically, we got to get Farley and Tom together again. They got to rock out in the basement. They play music professors who are on sabbatical.
Oh, man.
And they, yeah. And they get tangled up in some devious things in the little town, investigating some devious things. But there's a lot of music. So we just got to get those guys together again and get those scenes done. But a lot of the hard work is done. And all of the crowd scenes and sort of things with many people are filmed and edited already. It's on my computer now.
That is too cool.
We would have been done filming just, you know, last April-ish was when we wanted to. But interstate travel was heavily frowned upon,
yep,
and has been since then. And so it's like, we'll just wait till things settle down. But we're not wasting that time. Charlie and I are almost done the script for the next movie after Metal Detector. It's called Heard She Got Married. And both Metal Detector and this one are a little different, you know. We're trying to do it so, you know, like the movies that we've been discussing today, it's a really unique style of humor where like it's funny to watch people deliver weird lines and weird situations. And now for Metal Detector Maniac, the humor, like the characters themselves are funny and they know it. Do you know what I mean, Richard?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so that we're going for that. We're kind of just trying something different. So, you know, it's a different vibe. And then Heard She Got Married is more of a noirish mystery situation. But the two new movies have a lot in common. They're both going to be in black and white, and they're going to have a lot of music in them. And I'm super pumped for both.
And no supernatural in either of them. So it's a bit more.
Okay.
It's a bit more realism, these two.
Well, I noticed an evolution of y'all's filmmaking. I think Slingshot Cops is very different from everything else you guys had done. And I was really interested in that. So yeah, I'm very excited to see you guys continue to try new things. You're not going to
wouldn't say we put a lot of thought into that at all. I think it was just like, let's write another movie. And whatever came out, came out. There was no plan for that, really.
Something was different. I still want that sequel. I still want Freaky Farley 2, the Christmas. Or Hanukkah. Someone suggested it be a Hanukkah one.
Yeah, oh well, we have big ideas for Freaky Farley 2. We wanted to take place in like the next day and for me to have aged 20, 25 years, but to not comment on it, you know? So that's going to be fun.
There's a lot of creatures. It's going to be so cool.
It would be cool to do that. If ever we're going to do another movie and film, it would be that one, you know, because it'll be kind of jarring to go from part one to part two if it's that much different in the format.
Oh, man. Before I let you guys go, Matt, you're also a songwriter and a musician. You want to talk about, want to plug some of your albums, talk about some of your upcoming musical adventures?
It dawned on me back when digital music was slowly happening. At some point, it dawned on me that there's an emptiness in the music world that I need to fill up, and there's not like songs about very, 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 very specific things. You know, like there's plenty of songs about love or like songs about New York, but there's not a lot of songs about like broccoli or like a random city in Illinois, you know? So I'm just trying to fill in the blanks. I currently use the name The Guy Who Sings Songs About Cities and Towns, and by the end of this year, I'll have done an album with at least 50 songs about cities in every state in the U.S. So so I'm just churning it out. I've released 21,000 songs, and nothing's gonna stop me. I'm working as hard as ever. I have 80 different pseudonyms under which I release music, and it's my day job now, which is amazing.
That is amazing. Weirdly enough, I know nothing about sports at all. Period. So I really love all of your sports songs about very specific players, mm-hmm. coaches. Teams, they crack me up because I literally have no clue what you're talking about.
I've shied away from that lately because what I learned was people get traded or signed with new teams too frequently, and like it broke my heart. I'd finish an album about like the teams in Cleveland, and then like suddenly like LeBron goes to Miami, and I'm like, no. My LeBron song is useless now. This stinks. So it's been a while. I do want to update it a little bit, but it was too hard to keep up with. The thing about cities and towns is that they're not really going anywhere, so they have a longer shelf life.
There you go. Well, you can always do 2.0 for all the sports ones. Just do the second version where they are now, and then third version, fourth. And then when the person finally retires, then you can talk about them in retirement, what they get up to.
But before I die, I think I'll have at least 40,000 songs. So that's going to be pretty good.
God, that's amazing. Yeah, my band, it takes us like 2 years to get a song recorded.
Well, I mean, Laurie Strode is one of the best songs ever. So however you make it happen is good.
Bonus, I don't remember how to play that one. Yeah, that's the other thing that happens.
Well, I'm in the same boat as you. I don't know how to play. I don't know how to play any of mine.
Charlie, what's the best way to support you guys' filmmaking? You talked about the different streaming sites and everything. What else can we do, the audience at home, to keep you guys making these movies?
Yeah, well, I think sharing the reviews and sharing the, you know, recommendations is a free way for somebody to get the word out there, because we don't have any marketing budget. So if somebody can use word of mouth to convince one of their friends to watch it, even if it's like a free stream somewhere, that's good. Or just to talk on social media about it. For somebody who says, oh, I've seen every slasher movie, or I've seen all the regional movies, well, they probably haven't seen Freaky Farley because it never got a proper release. You know, it's just self-distributed. So A, spread the word. B, watch all of our movies on Prime or on Vimeo. And if we could sell a little bit more on there, then yeah, maybe we'll be able to make more, increase the frequency, and maybe make more merchandise too. Because I haven't had any shirts or anything in a while because we didn't sell them quickly enough. But spread the word and stream it.
Awesome.
What about the laser beam? What's the story with that?
I wrote a movie called Crazy Fortune Teller, and as soon as I posted it on YouTube, I discovered that there was a children's film, like a 12-year-old child and her friends had made a film called Crazy Fortune Teller, and of course their film was better than mine, so I immediately changed the title to Laser Beams, and I have all the raw files from, I used an old VHS camera to make it, and I have all the raw files, but I edited it in Windows Movie Maker. So I couldn't do reaction shots while people were talking because you can't just take audio easily and lay it over. So every scene had to be like just cut, you know, one person's talking, next person's talking, and then very boring. So I cut about 12 or 15 minutes of dialogue. I wrote too much dialogue for when the devil talks to the fortune teller.
It happened to
you. And then for the big climactic scene at the end, I left the date on. I'd actually pressed the date time, so I have to, the last shot has to be zoomed in, and it screws up the quality of the film. All of a sudden it's zoomed into the person's face, which is funnier, but it was a real nightmare. I'll link it to you guys so you can see it.
Yeah,
I'll have to do a redo.
So it's online, it's available.
Yep,
it's online,
it's on my channel, on my YouTube channel. Oh. So it's there.
Okay.
Hopefully I'll do a laser beams 2.0 version and actually make it the way I want to make it.
Hey, I'm going to watch
it. You give me laser beams.
Exactly. But guys, it's been a joy. I can't believe you guys took the time out to talk to me about one of my favorite films of all time, my favorite independent horror films. I forced so many people to watch this movie. And
yeah, you're helping
they
us,
man. Always like it. Everyone loves Freaky Farley. Our dearly departed Nafa. Our buddy, our podcaster buddy, and my good friend, he loved everything you guys did.
So nice.
And and Brad, of course, Brad's a huge fan of Don't Let the River Beast Get You.
What we need is a miracle. We need somebody who's going to, like, who would pick it up and rescan the negative, you know, Ooh. Because it was done so quickly just to SD the first time. No one, neither Farley nor I, has really ever seen Freaky Farley. We never had dailies. You know, it just got transferred. The negative went right to these digi beta tapes. And it's like, if someone out there in the world who had power and a telecine and time hook up the original camera negatives to Freaky Farley and then remaster it, you know, it would be kind of like, whoa, that would be exciting.
Do a crowdfunding and just, it may take years, but just have a crowdfunding going and just do that to remaster it. I mean, I'm sure you guys could hype that while you're doing all the other stuff. Maybe you'll get folks to pay for it, give them some extras.
I'm probably too shy personally, but that would be super cool.
We have a thing on my website. We just have an offer if anyone wants to produce our next movie for a mere $350,000. They can be the producer. We make the movie, and then we give it to them, and they can do whatever they want with it. They can even just keep it and never release it, like Wu-Tang.
It'll be on a gold. It'll be on a gold Blu-ray with golden, artisan crafting the cover.
Yeah, we need like a Howard Hughes to hire us and boss us around.
Yeah. You can give us a little bit of creative input, but only a little bit. We don't want to deal too much. But anyone out there with a lot of money you don't know what to do with, produce our next movie just for fun.
Hey.
It's basically the cheapest way you can produce a feature film.
Jeff Bezos, I know he can do it. So,
come on, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, we had talked about promotion things too. Imagine if you did a movie where your thing was you were only going to show it once in person and then never again.
Yeah, but that might not work out though.
Yeah, but nothing has worked out yet.
Nothing worked out.
You start grasping at straws.
So, well, guys, thank you again for hanging out. I really appreciate it.
This has been a blast. We're big so fans of the Doom Show.
Thank you.
And your books too, Richard.
Oh man, I appreciate that. So, folks, check out the books. I'm gonna have links all over this episode. And I'm going to have links to all of their movies that I can find. and just give these guys your support, because they really are super cool, genuine people making fun stuff. And I'm in awe that you guys can do this stuff and are keeping at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're going to be in one of them one day, Richard.
I will. This is... got to get over my fear of flying and my fear of driving and my fear of not screwing up your movie. Thanks, folks. Bye.
Hello, This Is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This Is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This Is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.